Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley, all the places to find. And I've had a wild day of wild and crazy interviews from Miami Book Fair authors to Mike Lavalier, a.k.a. Spanky. But I got to save the last for the best. And I mean, it's an honor to have in the program celebrity from the History Channel, Pawn Stars, Rick Harrison. Rick, thanks for calling, and how are you today?
I'm actually doing great. Life is, I'm living the dream. Got this beautiful wife, beautiful kids, great family, and I haven't been canceled yet.
Hey, you figured out a way to entertain people in the reality TV deal. And I'm sure you never thought that growing up that you'd be a reality TV star, right?
I had no clue. It just sort of, through the course of events, sort of fell in my lap over the years.
All right. Well, we have you on the line as an education portion of our show for sure. You're having a national awareness campaign called Lower My Trigs, and it's very interesting. Not trigonometry. And tell us specifically, you never thought I'd say something like that, but I understand you were diagnosed with high triglycerides. Tell me when that happened, how you felt when that happened.
Well, you know, it's the basic thing. I'm 49 years old. I go see the doctor. You know how it is when you see the doctor. It's, you sit there, you ask questions for a while, and then you, the doctor hands you and says, pee in this cup. I need to get some blood. And you wait 2 weeks, your fingers crossed. And she called me up 2 weeks later and said, everything's great, but, I mean, you know, whenever a doctor says, but, you know, your heart skips a beat. And she told me I had very high triglycerides. It was a prescription drug I needed to get on. And it, you know, I had to get on prescription drugs. And, you know, you've seen my television show. I'm a pretty cheap guy. So the health food store. And I could, you know, just get a supplement over the counter. I get some fish oil or something like that would take care of it. I started doing my research. I came to realize that the stuff you get in the supplements you get in a health food store, you really don't know what's in them. They might lower your triglycerides a little bit, but then they also will most likely raise your bad cholesterol, which I definitely did not want because I already have bad cholesterol. And I started taking a prescription drug, and through the course of a few events, I got hooked up with a company that makes the drug, and I rarely do endorsements because it's just, I'm a real moral guy. Unless it's a really great company and they do things for people, I just don't mess with them. And, it turned out they're a great company. They got a website. It's called lowermytrigs.com. And you have very high triglycerides and you can go on there. They have prescription copay cards that are only, they can make prescriptions only $9 a month because I know people have a big problem. They get on prescription drug and they can't afford it.
Right, exactly.
Wrecks their whole. They're so expensive, it sort of wrecks their standard of life. And this is a company that really wants to help out people. And you can get, like I said, it's only $9 a month if you have the condition, and that's not going to hurt anybody. And you know what I mean? I don't know if it's because of the drug or anything else like that. I'm trying to get healthier, and by doing a more healthy lifestyle, I'm feeling better.
You're definitely feeling better, and you like to know that what's contained in the medication is something that is not going to have adverse effects on you later on. Even though it's going to help one thing, you don't want it to hurt other things, right?
Yeah, and that was just it. I mean, in the end, you know, it's like my doctor sits back and says, well, Rick, I'm a doctor and you're not. So it's generally best to listen to your doctor. I mean, it's a bad thing when you try and diagnose yourself and self-medicate.
Definitely. Get on the right medications so that you can live a healthy life and a life that you can spend with your family and be an entertainer in so many ways and other things, Rick. And I think that's great. And when you see something that works, you want to tell the world about it, right? That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, I mean, it's just the way I've always been in my life. You know, I mean, I like to be, when I have friends over for dinner or have a dinner party at my house, I like to be the dimmest person in the room. I like to surround myself by really smart people. That way you learn something. And, you know, it's it's one of the lessons I've pounded into all my kids. I got six kids. I've always pounded it. So if, you know, the day you think you know everything is the day you stop learning.
That's fantastic. And by the way, Rick, I have five kids. So together we have 11. So we're busy with our other ventures as entrepreneurs and also the family. So you definitely need to have something, especially with the high stress level life that you live, right? For sure.
I have my little stress reliever. So I box every morning, and which I guess can be healthy and bad at the same time. And I read dirt. I ride dirt bikes, which can relieve stress, but can break bones. Like I said, the whole campaign is: I want people to be healthy. I want people to go see their doctor. I want people to, before you go see your doctor, everyone knows for a couple of weeks they have a doctor's appointment. Whether that's your iPhone or your iPad or whatever smartphone you have, or just a pencil to keep in your pocket. And every time you think of a question you should answer your doctor, write it down. Because
yes,
when you go see your doctor, it's the same price whether you ask them one question or 50. Get your money's worth.
Well,
that's what people really need to start doing.
Definitely. When I ended up having a really bad back, I got great advice. Lose weight. I've dropped 19 pounds. I'm still a very big guy, 6'10" myself, Rick, and it was 290. Now I'm down to about 271, and my back feels great. So, again, take the advice of doctors. Don't think that you're just going to self-medicate yourself. Don't think that you could do it yourself. And you got to get healthy, and that's the key component, and so that's a fantastic thing. Now, Rick, update us on what's going on with Pawn Stars for the next season and stuff. What's going on? Can you tell me?
I am still filming. I'm filming season 11 right now. It's still going strong. It's still the number one show in history, and I am filming Pornography, which is my other show, which is my game show, and it stars. It's got me, Corey, and the tagline is the only game show where we don't want you to win. So the first round you have to go against, you have two contestants. The first round they got to go against Corey and Chum, which they generally beat. The second round, the two contestants go against me, and the person with the highest score at the end of that, what happens is they put me in a soundproof room, me, Corey and Chum in a soundproof room. They ask the contestant 10 questions in 60 seconds, and then we switch roles where they ask me 10 questions in 60 seconds. And then at the end of the game show, you know, there's a big prize out there. I go, the thing is, it's winner, you know, it's all or nothing. So I go out there and say, well, I think I beat you, but I'm not sure. So let me give you $1,000 and you just walk away. And we sit there and negotiate back and forth, and sometimes they seem really, really smart. I'll go a little bit more. If they don't, I'll go less. And, I try and make a deal with them. Sometimes they take the deal. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they take the deal and they answer more questions. But it's a fun game show. Everyone seems to like it. And Chris Titus is the MC, which is an incredibly funny guy.
So interesting. Now, did you ever think you'd be involved in the game show? We talked about reality TV, but now a game show. Were you a game show fan, Rick?
I don't think that the thought ever crossed my entire life.
Rick, were you a game show host, fan of game shows growing up?
I watch Jeopardy every once in a while. I generally don't watch that much television. I shouldn't be saying that because I don't watch television. You can get so much more information reading a book for half an hour than you can from a television show. And I'm a voracious reader. I read every night. I don't read as much as I used to. It's an hour or two a night I read. When I was all through my teens, 20s, 30s, and most of my 40s, I would read for 3-4 hours every night.
That's great. And do you think...
it sort of sucks on a game show. It sort of sucks on a game show because I know nothing about popular culture.
Well, I notice a lot of the superstar celebrities, even if they're involved in that, they don't know much about pop culture at all. You guys are too busy living your dream.
My daughters wanted to, my daughter, Maroon 5 was in Las Vegas, and my daughters wanted to be Adam Levine. And I'm going, well, who's that? there's some hotels I work with that he was playing there, so I was able to arrange it. But I'm like, I have no idea who these people are. I don't even listen to any music past 1981.
And so would you say growing up in school, you were interested in reading, or is that when you became older, you liked reading?
Oh, well, the thing was, I was really sick as a kid. I had a lot of medical conditions when I was a kid. I missed a lot of school. And when you're sick in bed, this was the 70s. We didn't have a lot of money. The television was downstairs in the living room. It wasn't in my bedroom. So, and this, you know, my mom went to the library, started getting me books. I fell in love with history books. And I never stopped reading. I mean, I've been reading history books voraciously since I was 8 years old.
Wow. That's fantastic. And how about yourself writing your own book, too? That must be cool, right?
It was pretty cool when I came out with the book. I mean, of all my accomplishments in life, saying I've been on the New York Times bestseller list is a pretty big deal.
So we add another title to you. We could call you again celebrity, History Channel, Pawn Star, Superstar, also Pawnography, Superstar, and now New York Times bestselling author. So one place, when I mentioned the Miami Book Fair, you should be there sometime, because that's a place you would love, I'm sure, with all those books. Phenomenal, these book fairs, what they do. And amazing. Education.
I would love to be there. I have a whole library at my house. I mean, it's the pride and joy of my house. My kids love the swimming pool. I love my library.
Well, that's fantastic and a success. Any other projects going on? Are you doing any charity work right now, Rick, or anything?
I do charity work for the Epilepsy Foundation, because I had that as a kid. I got my podcast. It's my podcast. We call it the podcast. I'm eating that pond to take the death. The other thing is, go to lowermytricks.com. It talks all about very high triglycerides. Everyone needs to check out. You know, it doesn't cost you anything to go to a website. It gives you questions to answer. Ask your doctor, because you should be asking him 50 or 75 questions when you walk in that doctor's office.
Most definitely. And when you ask those questions, things are going to go better for sure, because again, then you learn this stuff from the website. It's educational. Then you ask the right questions, because a lot of times people, Rick, they need a wake up call. That's the worst wake up call, like getting sick.
And it's that one question where you have that little tinge in your back or whatever it is that you ask your doctor, that, you know, maybe make your doctor go, hold on a minute, let me get this test done. And so, tons of questions for your doctors. LowerMyTriggs.com has a lot of questions you should ask if they're pertinent to you. So that's all I'm trying to get out right there. I really want people to have a healthier lifestyle. It'll cut back on insurance costs and everything. I'll pay less for my employees in the long run.
Hey, that's the important thing, and you're definitely providing an awareness that's needed. So where are the best places for you to find you, Rick? You have a Twitter, Facebook. Where are the best places to connect with you?
It's Rick_Harrison on Instagram, Gold Silver Pawn on Twitter, and those are about the two I do. I don't have time for all the other ones.
It's time consuming for sure, but good talking to you. Best of luck with all the different ventures you're doing, and good luck, and keep enjoying reading. I love hearing on an education show someone that loves to read, so you keep that up, and best of luck with everything else. Good talking to you, Rick.
All right. Good talking to you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to Author's Corner on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook. LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google+, Neil Haley. And the Miami Book Fair series, which is one of my favorite series. We cover all interviews of authors coming up to the Miami Book Fair, November 16th to 23rd. The street fair is the 21st to 23rd. Fantastic time, especially in the east where the weather is going to get colder and colder. What a way to get warm, enjoy great authors, a great working with the authors, and also the fans. Tremendous activities, all those things to definitely go to the Miami Book Fair. 21st to 23rd, and I'm so excited to welcome the program celebrity chef, the Iron Chef from the Food Network, author of All or Nothing, One Chef's Appetite for the Extreme, Jesse Schenker. Jesse, thanks for calling. How are you, man?
Hey, great. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, absolutely. How excited are you about going to the Miami Book Fair? It must be, especially being a Floridian, you're excited, aren't you?
Oh, very excited. It's going to be very cool to, come back to my hometown and my native South Florida roots and, you know, show off the book and get excited to, you know, meet other authors.
And you know how cold it'll be in New York by that time.
Oh, definitely. It'll be a change for sure. Especially this last winter was just brutal. So getting down there and, you know, it's the perfect time of year down there in Miami in November.
Exactly. And when you were in Florida growing up, did you attend the Miami Book Fair ever?
You know what? I didn't. Looking back, I wish I would have. But I did not. But you know, this is the first year, and I'll definitely hopefully continue and make it a commitment to going down there year after year after this.
Once you're there, you always want to go back. It's so great to connect with these authors and, you know, and talk to them and the fans, and especially your fans of you for sure. Now you've come a long way in your life from the days growing up in Florida, especially. And that's why you wanted to tell that story, right? Especially write this book because of what adversity you went through, especially during your high school days and before that, correct?
Yeah, no, definitely. Struggled along the way and had some, you know, issues with drugs and some definitely diversity and adversity. And, you know, it's important to me to write the book to show people that, you know, through their passion and willingness, you know, it's really, possible to accomplish anything. Just a little dedication and hard work. And, you know, I was able to channel my passion in food and kind of turn my life around and make something of it. And I'm very grateful and excited to tell the story.
It definitely seems like you're excited to tell the story. But when you first decided you have to sit down and write this book, was that difficult for you to say, oh, my gosh, now I'm really going to show the whole person, not the person that, you know, owns a restaurant, but also the person that's been on the Food Network winning the Iron Chef and really kind of laying myself all out there for sure?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a cathartic and therapeutic process doing so, and there was definitely some anticipation about releasing it and you know, exposing myself. But you know, really, kind of, it's in the title, you know, All Nothing Extreme. It's just kind of been the way I've been living and my motto from, you know, going to the dark side of the world with my drug abuse, and then, you know, kind of the upside being a restaurateur and chef in New York. You know, so it was a process in which, you know, it was very organic. So the fear was definitely there, but, you know, it's out there, and anyone who knows me and is close with me, you know, kind of knew my history, but now it's exposed to the world. But no fear, no regrets. Hopefully I can, you know, help people and show people that anything's possible.
Definitely show people anything's possible, and that's definitely telling the story. I want to kind of go back, and maybe you didn't even have this in your book. You're talking about the drug addiction and things like that. Did certain things growing up as a child, because I am a school teacher, especially in the elementary days, did you see certain things of reasons why you were drawn to things like that earlier, like kind of going back even to mental health-wise later on when you were in elementary school and stuff?
You know, I definitely noticed, I think all my teachers and people were like, oh, Jesse's so... you know, he's got so much potential if he just would, you know, apply himself. And I was always, you know, getting in trouble and being the center of attention. I mean, I got, you know, suspended from school for doing very, you know, adolescent things, whether it was mooning the bus driver or just acting out. So there were definitely warning signs that I was, you know, not exactly going the right direction, but I wasn't a bad person. You know, I was very nice and I was extremely sensitive. I just had some internal, you know, anxieties that I, you know, eventually self-medicated, but didn't really know at the time that, you know, were so serious. So it kind of just, you know, organically kind of just spiraled out of control. You know, when you're young, you know, when you're an adolescent, I mean, who really, everyone I think feels kind of, you know, in an awkward place,
yes.
Whether it's, you know, wanting to hang out with people or looking up to older kids or being very vulnerable. And, you know, I think for me, I had that gene, that addictive gene. And I think some people have it and some people don't. And, you know, if I only could have, you know, maybe like, you know, had some guidance or some different support growing up, things could have been different. But, you know, ultimately I don't regret what happened because I think my path is my path and it led me to where I am today. And, you know, again, it's something where I'm extremely grateful, and I'm hoping that people can read this book and say, wow, you know, like there is hope for me, or, you know, whether it's somebody who can relate or a parent that has a struggling, you know, sibling or child that's, you know, struggling with addiction of some sort, or, you know, or just a young entrepreneur that wants to take the next step that's afraid to get out of his own way, that, you know, this might push him over the edge to take a chance. You know, but I think, you know, being a child and kind of not fitting in or you know, that uncomfortable adolescent anxiety, you can't really identify it because you're so young. But I can look back as an adult and say, wow, it's just really uneasy.
You're right. And it's the things that you grew up with and things that happen. And when you talk about the word self-medication, because this is definitely, we could go on for hours, especially your childhood and things like that. But looking at self-medicating yourself, did you start with softer drugs and led to harder drugs in that self-medication? And it was because of a lot of your anxiousness, right? And different things that you were dealing with, especially when you were in high school and things like that. What made you go from, you know, softer drugs to harder drugs?
Well, it was really just, unfortunately, the disease of addiction is progressive and it's you know, really does not discriminate. So for me, I mean, you know, as cliche as it sounds, it did start with marijuana and it was a gateway. And, you know, for me, cooking was my first drug and my first passion. I remember sitting in my great grandmother's lap when I was like, you know, two or three and watching her peel an apple with a paring knife and just being mesmerized. And that was like the initial, wow, my legs stopped tapping. I feel calm. And I kind of chased that feeling of always being in the kitchen. And then when I was 12, 13 years old and I smoked pot for the first time, I was like, wow, the substance that was so much stronger and so much easier to obtain, kind of took over. And then, you know, with, you know, just the progression of the way the disease of addiction works, just kind of, you know, you smoke pot and your tolerance builds, doesn't work anymore. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're dabbling in pharmaceuticals and pain pills and, you know, it's kind of just that progressive, you know, thing that happens where, you know, it eventually consumes you and you need more and you get physically addicted and then you're kind of, your conscious dwindles and you start doing whatever you need to do to get that fix. Because when you're, you know, you're not having the drugs, the anxiety comes back twofold. It's kind of this,
exactly, yeah.
You know, it's this sick spiral, this rat in the cage symptom, you know, and for me, you know, it ultimately just brought me to my knees where I was just on the streets, actually homeless, doing, you know, really bad drugs. And eventually I surrendered and went to jail and, you know, grateful for that. And, you know, through jail and work release program, I got back in the kitchens again. And then my, you know, my passion just like reunited. It was like this light switched and I went like super hard into my career. Like the same way that I went down with the drugs, I went up with the career. I really ultimately just switched substances. I'm still the same addict. I just,
you figure out another addiction, right?
Yeah, but this one's healthy.
Exactly. It is healthy. Once you find that passion and you drive it, as kids, you know, both of us in certain ways, I didn't have that passion either. And now I have a passion of being an entrepreneur. I'm a passion of being in front of the TV or in the radio interviewing people. And that gives me that fuel every day to wake up and go. And I think that's what you're trying to show people is, and it doesn't mean you still aren't going to be anxious. Doesn't mean you're still not going to have your troubles and trials when you found what your passion is. Because there's always going to be tough times, right?
Always. It's a daily reprieve. Sometimes I have to go moment to moment, you know, and as long as I can be in the moment and know what I have and have my gratitude and look back and say, you know, last summer I was uncomfortable because I didn't know where my future was going to lead or what I was going to do with my children in school. And now it's a year later and they're in school and I have another restaurant and, you know, it's like, you know, I say, if I just keep putting the right foot forward and keep living with integrity and doing the right thing, great. You know, I can't control the consequences and whether they're good or bad. And, you know, they're you know, that's one thing that I've learned is that I can't control everything. I can only do the best I can. And whatever happens after that, I kind of just got to let it fall the way it falls and be okay with that. And again, it's a daily reprieve, you know. But for today, I feel great. And, you know, I have two beautiful children, a beautiful wife. Everybody's healthy. I got, you know, two restaurants. And I've had more than I could ever imagine.
Right.
And, you know, it's definitely easy to get caught up because there's just so many moving parts in owning a business and being a father and being a husband and being there present for everybody. You know, it's tough. And life does show up and throw you curveballs. But, you know, again, at the end of the day, if I could just sit back and kind of look down at my life and say, oh, my God, you know, where I was 10 years ago from where I am today. Like, I have no reason to complain at all.
Exactly. We look at all our bad times, we look at all our trials and tribulations, and we forget about all the things that are positive in our lives. And a lot of people that deal with anxiety and depression and you know, and you suffered from panic attacks, it's because you wanted to be in control of everything. And
exactly.
I know family members that are like that, and it drives me nuts. And I was there at a younger age, but I finally found my center and focus, and I'm so happy I did. But it's a daily struggle, and that's what the book's going to be able to tell people, Jesse, is your daily struggle that you're going on a daily basis, that you still can be successful. You went through, you hit rock bottom, but you found your purpose, and there you have it, right, Jesse? The life's
exactly.
Your oyster, but at times, even though you're this great author and chef and TV mogul, it doesn't matter. Because at the end of the day, you're going to look at things that didn't go well, right? And
that's true. Still human.
You're still human. You're going to make mistakes. But that's hard. That's hard to teach. And that's a life lesson. Hopefully, sharing that with your fans at the Miami Book Fair and sharing it at the fair and with other authors will be a fantastic thing. So, Jesse, where's the best place we can purchase your book and learn more about you?
AllOrNothingChef.com has all information about me, the book, where you can purchase it. It's in Barnes & Noble's nationwide, and also you can buy it on Amazon.
All right. Well, Jesse, it was great talking to you. Best of luck. And definitely reach out to me if you need any tips for your kids. That's my education's my expertise. And
we'll
stay in touch via social media ventures. And good talking to you. And best of luck in Miami, man.
Sounds good. You too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And, I mean, I can't believe the day a lineup of studio guests I have after coming out of being sick. You have Mike Lavalier. You have Rick Harrison from Pawn Stars, and you have all these different unbelievable guys to talk to today. So I first want to welcome the program Golden Glove winner Mike Lavalier. Mike, how are you? Pittsburgh Pirate. I'm glad to have you back on the show.
Neil, that's too flattering, dude. I mean, absolutely loving it. Yeah, thanks for having me back on, and always a pleasure to talk to the folks.
Well, absolutely, Mike. And I mean, this Pirate season, I mean, for 2 years, we could just be so proud of this team. And I kind of want to know if you were giving up on them through that journey just to get to the wild card. It was an amazing ride, wasn't it?
Well, you know, it really was. And, you know, they had a little adversity to start with. They didn't pitch nearly as well as they did the previous year. They had to rely a little bit more on the offense. Throughout the whole time, I kind of have a little bit more of an inside track. I stay in contact with Clint Hurdle throughout the season. We exchange some emails. I give him unsolicited advice, which at times he tells me that it's unsolicited and he likes it or dislikes it and lets me know about that. But, you know, at no point did I ever think that they were out of it. And it's unfortunate that they left as soon as they did because, yeah, I really think they had the makeup of a really, really good team that could have possibly, you know, won everything.
What do you think do you think Clint Hurdle has a lot to do with this? Because, I mean, everything was going wrong at the beginning of the season and nothing that you expected happened. How do they keep together?
Well, you know what? They believe in themselves. You know, being a coach in spring training for the last 2 years, and, you know, I see the dynamics of their locker room. And, you know, this is a group of guys that believe in each other. They are, they have a lot of faith in what they do, their system, offensively, defensively. Ultimately, when you have the athletes that they have, it's just a matter of time before they rise to the top. And that's, you know, really what we saw. They stuck in there. They never get down on themselves. You didn't see the finger pointing that you get at, some of the other organizations. And that's just, you know, that's the way Clint runs his ship. And it's, it's an absolute pleasure to watch.
Now, we'll talk about your prediction for next year, but I think that the key component is the Pirates never gave up, but again, everything came together at the right time, right place, and that's what baseball is about, allowing to have that those wild cards, that you're never out of it. And just imagine if it was just Division Series champions, probably they would have given up, and or not given up, but not had a shot at all, and they just kept persevering. And the hitting, did that surprise you a lot to see the hitting going, hitting the ball so well this year?
Well, you know, not really. I mean, there's some guys that stepped up. I think Neil Walker, you know, really took a leadership role, you know, where he came up with some big hits down the stretch. And, you know, you got to have that from the veteran. You know, obviously Andrew McCutchen, that's a no-brainer. You know, this guy day in, day out does a fabulous job for him, offensively and defensively. I mean, you're not an MVP for no reason, and probably, you know, if they don't give it to Kershaw, he'll be a second time MVP. But I think the linchpin out of this whole thing is Russell Martin. Russ, what he did last year and solidified that pitching staff. This year he did the same thing, but he added an awful lot of offense, and he also came up with big hits. So I mean, to me, if they can retain Russ, I would think why not win everything next year.
See, that's the point. What does Russell Martin bring to the table that I think you're happy to see the highlight of the catcher as such an important part of the team, especially with Russell Martin, that the Pirates media has brought out, national media has brought out, that he's able to make those pitchers better. And that is so key. And also Russ does it in the offensive department as well, but that you're not seeing catchers like that anymore. What makes Russell so special?
Well, you know, I think one of the things that he brings is he competes every single day, and he cares about his pitching staff, and they know that. And so each and every time that he's out there, you know, that pitching staff realizes that, you know, he's going to give it his all, so where the next day in the paper, they're going to get a W next to their name rather than a loss. You know, his leadership, obviously, he comes to play very intense. They know that, you know, he's going to do everything he can do to win the ball game. But, you know, those are the kinds of things that Russ brings to the table. And, you know, it's something that, you know, looking at this, you know, he's probably going to get a multi-year deal somewhere out there. I just hope that the Pirates are the ones that end up signing him, because when they first signed him, and I don't want to, you know, pat myself on the back, but I mentioned to Neil Huntington, I says, Neil, you just helped over 50% of your team with one signing. And he goes, well, how do you figure? I says, look, you've upgraded the catching position. That's one spot. You've upgraded your 12 pitchers because this one catcher is now making all of them better. That's 13 out of 25. One signing helped over half their team. And it's you know, Russell has proven my point over the last 2 years.
Now, you think he's going to sign? You think he's going to sign with Pittsburgh?
Well, you know, I think Russell's going to he's going to look at the market, and I think he's going to go to the best situation. I think there's no bones about it. Russell, if given you know, a level playing field, he'd love to stay in Pittsburgh. Remains to be seen. You know, if someone goes out there and just you know, gives him an offer he can't refuse, you know, they may lose them. So, you know, it could be very interesting. I know that they had talked before the season. They talked during the season. I got to think that they realize what they've got. It's just circumstances may, prohibit them signing Russ. So, hey, you know, it's something as a catching instructor in spring training, I'd love to see Russell Martin back next February.
And how much did you provide pointers for him in the last 2 years to help his game? I mean, he had his two best years, wouldn't you say?
again, Neil, you're too flattering. You know, you know what a good coach does? He doesn't get in the way whenever there isn't need to have happen. You know, what I'm doing with Russ is basically, you know, I'm there for you. What do you want to work on? Let's go ahead. He knows what he needs to do to get ready. And that's all I'm there for is, you know, Russ, I'm there when you need me. Some of the younger guys, yeah, get a little bit more impact you know, on Tony Sanchez and some of our younger catchers in the system. But for us, it's just basically, hey, Mike, I need to do a little bit of drills here. Help me out, and that's what I do. I throw my two cents in. You know, as far as some of the finer points on, you know, my opinion on certain pitchers. Hey, Russ, can you do this with this guy? You know, think about this with this guy. But for the most part, stay out of Russ's way. He's got it going on.
We're talking to Mike Lavalier, a.k.a. Spanky, the Pittsburgh Pirates, Golden Glove winner, and talking about, again, Russell Martin and the Pittsburgh Pirates and the different things. I think Russell Martin was a key thing, stepping up offensively even more this year, and also just Edison Volquez. I think, again, that has a lot to do with Russell Martin. Russell Martin really knows how to call a game, and Edison Volquez just needed to get that confidence back. I'm not going to look at that final game because that's throwing him to the wolves for so many ways, but to come back and have such a good year, Edison, just shows again how great the Pirates are developing players.
Well, they, you know, it just hats off, to Ray Searidge and Yuki, their assistant pitching coach, bullpen coach. Those guys were fabulous with Eddie in spring training, and I tell you. Edinson took his lumps in spring training, and I know there was a lot of heat, you know, put on Neil Huntington and the organization for signing this guy. He had a terrible spring, but he was also learning how to pitch a different way. They had the patience to work with that. We talked about it before, and again, this is, you know, before it was over, I says, hey, Neil, Eddie's going to be fine for you. He's learning some different things. But when push comes to shove, you know, here's a guy that knows how to compete. He's got good stuff. He will relax whenever the bell rings, and that's what we saw. And, it's just kudos, again, to, you know, Ray and Yuki. Yumbly Chess are fabulous with all these pitchers. You mix in, Clint's patience and, you know, Russell Martin's, doggedness on getting the most out of his pitchers. And, you know, that's how things work.
It's definitely how things work. And again, it shows the organization. Now, do you think if the Pirates next year do not only reach the wild card, it's going to be a failure for them? They need to go further.
Well, you know, it's a failure if you don't picking up the trophy at the end of the year, and that's the way they feel. Making it to the wild card last 2 years, yeah, it was great. The year before, they were the benefit of making it in the fifth place. You know, this year it worked against them. You know, being fourth. You take the good with the bad, but ultimately, if you're not raising that trophy and jumping on each other at the very end, it's a disappointment. So I can't say that anything less than the world championship is not going to be good enough for these guys, and that's their goal. I'm sure it will be the next spring when they went into this spring. Hey, that was fun and all last year, but we've got to take another step. So you keep giving yourselves chances to win, and that's all you can ask. And so far, we haven't gotten to where we need to, but it's better than it has been.
Now, the hope, I guess, is the Kansas City Royals win the World Series. If the Kansas City Royals win the World Series, then it shows that a small market team can win the World Series, right? That's where finally baseball has come to a point where you can see teams that don't have a large payroll win it. That's probably your hope as well, to see KC do really well because their payroll is a lot lower than some of the other teams.
Well, here's my skinny on that, okay? You've got a free market system. You've got businesses that obviously are bigger than others. You get your niche. You've got to be better in certain areas. There, make no bones about it. Frank Coonley, Neil Huntington, Clint Hurdle, the scouting staff, they have to be better at certain things than, let's just say, the Red Sox and the Yankees. They have to be better. It's just the way it is. There's nothing that's going to change that. But given that, they realize it, and they're very conscientious about all they do, and it's I've seen it firsthand. And these guys are trying to put their best team out there, not only in the big leagues, but in AAA and AA, and develop these guys from within. So now you can pick and choose those free agents that you'll need to win. And that's a, you know, that's just the way that it has to happen. You know, if it wasn't like that, then, you know, everybody would own an IBM computer, or everybody would own an Apple computer. It's just the nature of how the system's set up. And, you know, the Twins, I'm going to say the Cardinals are a small market team. Is the payroll up there? Yeah, it is. But at the same token, I mean, it's a small market. You just got to be better in certain areas. You can't afford the mistakes that some of the bigger market teams can afford to make.
And the thing that's happening, and I think that this is where baseball needs to think about realigning their thought process with a salary cap or something, which I don't know, Mike, will ever happen, because now you're seeing the players that are making the big money not producing as well as the ones that are trying to play for that big contract. And that's going to have to make people think. You're not seeing that in the NBA, you're not seeing that in the NHL, and you're not seeing that in the NFL. And that's because you have a salary cap. And I don't know if that will ever happen, but they have to definitely look at it and saying, well, buying players doesn't mean you're going to win. And I guess...
Well, Nick. Hey, Neil, you know, back in the day, I was a player rep. And, you know, it was my job to inform my players. I knew that there were certain things that, as a union, we believed in. And whenever we go into... bargaining sessions, you know, we have in our agenda. At no point do I ever believe that in baseball we will agree to a salary cap unless it's proven that the industry is in distress. And that's something that, again, I think salary cap is more of a scapegoat and something for everybody to throw around. But I don't believe that that fixes anything. I got to believe that you draft well, you develop well, and then you put the chemistry together and you do it on the field.
But again, we look at these contracts, Mike, and we see some of these people making a ton of money and not producing. So we have to really look, and I guess that goes back to when you sign these players, are they really going to produce what they need to produce? And I think
You know, Neil, I hate to interrupt you, but, you know, you go to Las Vegas and you roll the dice. Well, sometimes it comes up snake eyes. Sometimes it comes up seven. So, you know, that's the nature of the beast. And that's where you've got to make, sound decisions. And, you know, I find a lot of teams that are willing to, let's just say, give exorbitant contracts to guys that are in declining years. And that, to me, is, you know, that's something that, you know, they need to take a look at as, you know, from the management side. The last time I checked, there wasn't a player yet that's gone into a negotiating session with a gun to anybody's head.
Right.
So, you know, and that's where, again, you know, management has to manage their assets, you know, a little better. Yeah, you're going to make good decisions. Well, you know, you just hope that the bad ones don't cripple you to where, you know, it makes a difference in your organization for a number of years.
So that's so true, Mike. And the last point before I want to find out what's going on with you now, because new things always develop with you for sure. The situation is that you got to look at the life of an NFL player and start researching what the life of a baseball player is. Some baseball players can play 15, 20 years and produce at a high level. Others can't. And in the NFL, they're very good at reevaluating talent and seeing when players are declining, and not a lot of them are getting the big contracts. The NBA is making those mistakes still. I don't think the NHL does. So it's got to be a decision making, but if they have loads of money in pockets and they fill the stadium every day, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter the owner and the bottom line, they're making money.
You know, and again, that's, I think each and every business owner out there, you know, whether you're a mom and pop place or if you're a conglomerate, you make decisions. And those decisions ultimately affect, you know, whether you're, you know, your profit loss. And I look at profit loss, not just dollar signs, but as in fan interest. I look at the Pirates in the last couple of years, and their fan interest has greatly increased. So I got to think that what they're doing things right. So, you know, ultimately, are the fans happy with the product that they're putting out on the field? Much happier now than they were, let's say, 5 years ago.
Absolutely. So what's your prediction? Where are they going next year? Wild card again or division championship?
No. You know what? Since they got me involved, we're winning everything. And I expect nothing less. And that, you know, and that's just the way it is. I mean, whenever Clint, you know, he's asked me the last 2 years, that's my sole intention is when I'm down here in spring training is to prepare these guys for a championship season. Clint demands championship practice to be a championship team, and that's the way I go about my business. So, you know, if Clint asks me to help him again next year, you know, next spring, it'll be nothing different.
All right. Well, Mike, also you were telling me you're doing some other work when the season you're not doing ESPN3. You do some high school games, commentary, but what else?
Well, yeah, I work with Bright House Sports Networks. You know, I've handled the Florida State Championships for baseball the last 4 years, all classifications. They've got 8 classifications right now. This past 2 years down at JetBlue Park, what they call Fenway South. This year I did the Fast Pitch Girls State Championship after I retired. My daughters played travel softball, so I got a chance to do that. And I'm also working with State College of Florida with their catchers. And basically just say, hey, guys, this is what I do with, you know, Russ Martin and, you know, the rest of the Pirate catchers in February. So let's see if it'll work here in the fall to get them ready for their spring season. So, yeah, I keep my nose around in baseball and happily get out of the house for my wife.
Do you see yourself ever going working for MLB Network or anything like that, Mike?
Well, you know, Neil, I'd like to think that you know, I can offer some insight that somebody eventually, you know, wants me to, you know, get in the booth. They've always said that I've got a face made for radio. So, you know, maybe a radio station will pick me up. But, you know, it's something that I really enjoy doing, you know, something that as a catcher, you pick up the nuances that are going on out there. And it just that's why you see, you know, a lot of major league managers or catchers, because you just pay attention to so many things.
Definitely doing, and you're a student of the game and a great teacher, Mike, and it was great having you on the show. I noticed now also, I don't know if you had a Twitter last time we were on, but you do have a Twitter and some places people can find you. Where are the best?
Oh yeah, I got I'm a social butterfly here. I've got at Spanky Catches. And I return all of my Twitter questions, and I've got a Mike LaValliere Facebook page. So folks out there that have some questions, just shoot me something. Just beware that the question you ask might not be the answer that you want.
Well, I'm just telling you right now, Mike LaValliere needs to be on the MLB Network for radio or doing baseball. He needs to get one of those gigs because he knows the game. And I would enjoy listening to you, especially for Pirate broadcasts or any of the baseball teams. You are a talent, and I'm glad to know you. And good talking to you, Mike.
Neil, it was always my pleasure. Thank you so much for the call.
All right, take care, man. Okay, see ya.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Tutor Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor. Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And when I think about this NFL athlete, he's definitely the jack of all trades when it comes to, if we're going to talk, analyzing football, which we'll be talking about in the second segment, to also the college recruiting process and also involving the SAT. And it seems like since you and I started teaming up, they're starting to talk about Darnell a lot about the SAT as well. So I'm so excited to welcome the program Super Bowl champion, Pitt star, Darnell Dinkins. Darnell, how are you?
Neil, I'm doing great, man. Thank you for having me on the show again. I'm looking forward to our next segment. It's going to be interesting for all the listeners out there, whether you're in PA or all over the country or across the world.
Exactly, across the world. That's the awesome thing about this internationally. You never know who will pick this up. And then I'm sure there are players that consider, you know, that in any sport that might be thinking of playing in the United States, especially with our stations in Canada and all that. But what I wanted to really talk about, Darnell, is we talked about at the TV studio your story about how when you chose Pitt, and this is no knock against Pitt, you didn't really look at all your options. You kind of were drawn to the school without asking sometimes those right questions. So when you finally might have, two weeks ago we talked about the different height, weight, and, you know, and are you a D1 person, are you D2, are you D3, are you NEIA, all those different components. Now the situation is, hey, I've chosen the types of schools that are recruiting me. What kind of questions should you ask, and what types of things when you're going on recruiting visits should you be looking for? That's so important. Well, yeah.
That is such a good topic, Neil. And what I like to talk to, you know, when I go and speak, and I was just out Bentworth, you know, on Monday next week, October 20th, we will be speaking at North Allegheny High School in the auditorium at 7 p.m. So if anybody's in the area and listening right now, want to get some information, they can come there. But what I talk about in the big segment of our speaking is the right level of play for you. Now, like you said, there's all different levels. There's Division I, there's 1AA, there's D2. There's NAIA, Division III, and JCs for some people who may not be academically strong. But when you are trying to decide the school, if anybody's out there listening, what's my right level of play? I got to base it upon my height, my size, my weight. But at the same time, Neil, which a lot of parents don't take do enough due diligence on, is getting to these schools prior to being recruited. So I always suggest that parents take at least 2 unofficial visits, and I would start as early as 8th grade. Take 2 unofficial visits to schools. And one of the greatest things that we do, once again in our book, I get every Division I, Division II, NAIA, and Division III school in every state in alphabetical order. The name of our book is The Student Athlete in College Recruiting, which people can get on our website at www.thinkethictraining.com. And one of the best things about it, Neil, is that when I go to a school, I want to be able to see the social life. I want to be able to see the classrooms, the environment, and ultimately the coaching staffs and how the players are going about their day. Now, when you go through some of these junior days, whether you're a volleyball player, you're a softball player, you're a football player, it's kind of overwhelming. There's thousands of kids there. The coaches don't really get a lot of one-on-one time with your parent and you. So if you and your mom decide to go, or you and your dad decide to go to a school, whether you want to go to a Duquesne, a Robert Morris, a Slippery Rock, a Pitt, you call the coaches up. Any event going on campus, you'll get 3 complimentary tickets for this unofficial visit. This is an unofficial visit. You're taking the time to go and see. It doesn't matter if it's the quiet period or whatnot. You can go right there. You can actually talk to the coaches while on campus. You can then go around and see the campus. But the biggest thing about this, when I was recruiting kids, Neil, is I would tell them, understand this, college and your decision is not based upon a 1-year commitment. It's a 4 to 5 year commitment for the next 4 to 5 years of your life. So you want to make sure that this college has everything you want socially, then academically, and usually lastly, athletically, which right. You should be able to do that. But those 2 components are big. And looking at a survey from Sports Illustrated, over 30% of the student athletes that go to college transfer after their first year because either they believe the coach, they went there because a girlfriend or boyfriend went there, they don't like the social life, they're not getting the type of playing time they thought they would. So taking unofficial visits are big. And I have in a book, once again, a lot of questions. If I had asked these questions, Neil, I may not have ended up at Pitt. But on page 82 in our book, I say, you want to find a person on a team. One of the guys who made it be walking around and say, ask the coaches, do you mind if I ask this kid from the team a couple of questions? And I would first ask them their hometown and high school size, just to see if you compare. If you come from a Shenley, it's a lot different than coming from a North Allegheny, right. As it is coming from a Jeanette, as it is coming from a Clareton. So we want to make sure that they have the right high school size and hometown. Then secondly, if any of you listeners out there are listening, I would ask, how do they feel they fit at that university? Asking a kid how they feel they fit is key. There's some schools that, you know, are more city-based. There are some schools that are more, you know, campus-based. Like my wife, when she seen Pitt's campus, she was like, I don't know if I would feel comfortable going there. I would like to go to more of a Penn State type of place because it's a more of a campus, you know, type of feel. And with me, when I was taking my unofficial visits, I remember going to Temple. And if anybody out there has ever played Grand Theft Auto, that's what it reminded me of. You know, it's like, inside the city is great. You step outside, you may get ran over by a car, you may get jacked, you never know. But, you know, Temple's a great university, but the surrounding area is a little, you know, seems a little,
exactly,
you know. And so the next question I would ask me on the next two questions, I believe, are big questions to ask the student that's on the team already at college. You would ask, once again, if any listeners just, you know, came in, we're just touching base on unofficial visits and some questions that you can ask if you happen to be at that college. And I would ask this athlete, if they could do it all over again, would they still come to the school, which is a big question. And now that they have this kid at the school, a lot of times the whole recruiting process is like a court thing. You want to court this kid. You tell this kid
exactly,
everything they can
yeah.
do there. You want to, you know, believe the hype. I mean, Coach Majors and them, they came right up to Elmore Square, right in the hood, and came in my house with telling me how I would be the only quarterback taken that year and how they foreseen me doing things. And it was right around the Cordell Stewart slash stuff. So they said, well, have you doing this over here and doing that? You'll be on the field all the time doing stuff. They sold me the dream. Not always the case, but, you know, I understand the recruiting process.
Exactly. Let me jump in. I got questions because there are definitely things that are going through my mind as a student athlete where I made the mistakes and then I ended up becoming a professional wrestler. But before, when I first chose my college, when I was going through the official visits for Division III basketball, the situation I dealt with was I was not thinking of anything except the social life. And am I going to get playing time?
Right.
And then that's not going to be the same thing after your first semester. And that's the maturity level of 17-year-old, 18-year-old kids.
Exactly.
That's why they have to go in this process to understand. Parents, you need to share with your children your experiences in college, if you've gone to college.
Yeah.
Experiences
yep.
of what you've gone through, or your siblings have gone, or your siblings or relatives or anyone that has gone to college needs to sit down and talk to your son or daughter and say, you know, really, when you're choosing a school, don't just choose it on sports. Because honestly, I look at the schools I went to. One I didn't want to go to because that team was going to stink, but the campus was awesome. It was more of a smaller school fitting. I forget that it was a school out in Virginia, and these D3 schools were very interesting in so many aspects. But if I would have known Darnell Dinkins, I would not be looking at D3 schools right now.
Yes.
I would have been looking at D1 schools because he would have trained
yes.
me so that I would have been a top Division I prospect. Just had to
yes.
had to pump you up on that thing. So if my son ends up that height, you know who will be training him. But it's just a situation where you make these decisions based on things as teenagers. Parents, you need to be involved in this process. Interview your son or
Absolutely.
Daughter and ask them specifically. So at a recruiting, maybe have a checklist, right, Darnell? Here's what
yes.
we really want to accomplish. So go to these unofficial visits before these official visits, because guess what? When I went to official visits, this is what they do. Here's the gym. Here are the players you're going to hang out with. This is going to be your playing time. Let's go party. That was
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
That was it.
Exactly. And trust me, every coach is going to meet a kid or a parent where they're at. So if you're not asking, you know, questions that are going to go in detail about your career, they're definitely not going to go into detail about it for exposing a lot of those things. Their main thing is if they have a kid that they want, then they actually emphasize what they want to do to get that kid. So for everybody, it's going to be a little bit different. But like I was saying about the questions I would ask on an unofficial visit, one of the last questions, one of the most important questions I would ask is, I would ask the player on the team already, has the coaching staff delivered on everything that they said to them? But now just imagine yourself, Neil, when you was going through college, and if I could imagine if I was going to college, you know, if you heard some of these answers, would you think that you were so far above the bar that these issues won't happen to you? And that's what happens a lot of times with these 16, 17, 18-year-old kids are coming up. They're getting recruited. Now you got social media involved, and they got 400 or 500 followers on their page, a lot of coaches. So they think that everything that's told them is going to happen. I'm going to be playing. They don't understand the guys that are already there that have been told the same
or
thing.
Or the other people recruited the same time as you.
Exactly. So, you know, there's a lot of things that goes into it. So kids need to understand that there's a possibility that I may not play, but that's why it's so important to choose the right level of play. And you're right, getting the parent involved. Ask them, what percentage of playing time may I receive? But this decision has to be based upon more than just the coach that is there and the playing time. And a lot of kids end up in bad situations because they pick a school totally on the athletic side of things. Don't think about the coaches leaving, and now they haven't put any emphasis on what the social life may be like, the area they're in, whether it's nice weather or whether it's cold weather. I know a lot of guys from Florida at Pitt used to have issues during the wintertime because they've never been in the cold before. You know, that's something you need to think about. If the coaching staff leave and they promise you playing time, then the new coaching staff come in, then you may not be, you know, even on their radar because they didn't like you at the other school they were at. There's all type of parameters that kids need to understand. But if you get that academic side and you say, okay, the coaches have left, I'm not playing the way I want to, but guess what? I can still get my education, or the social environment is just what I need to progress my professional career. Those are things that kids can't see right now, and that's why it's vital that parents are involved. They put a checklist together, and now with that checklist, I can rate my top five schools. I at least want to get it down to my senior to five schools that I'm really interested in. Not all D1, maybe.